The Supreme Court wrapped up its 2005-2006 term this past week with decisions ranging from criminal procedure to the death penalty to how the Bush administration wants to prosecute terror suspects held at the Guantanamo naval base in Cuba. Particular attention was paid to positions taken by two new members of the court, Chief Justice John Roberts and Associate Justice Samuel Alito, the only members of the court named by President Bush. Weekend Edition legal advisor and University of Colorado law professor Mimi Wesson keeps a close watch on the court, and she joins us now from the studios of KGNU in Boulder, Colorado. Mimi, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's start with the big case, that of Salim Ahmed Hamdan, a prisoner at the Guantanamo Detention Center in Cuba. This is being seen as a substantial rebuke of a key aspect of how the Bush administration has been dealing with suspects in the war on terrorism. What's your impression?
I'm not sure this is as big a rebuke as it's been described in some quarters. This is the third in a trilogy of cases. The other two were decided just about 2 years ago, that I'm confident will be remembered as cases about how power is distributed between the executive, the Congress, and the courts in time of war. And it's true that the court rejected certain arguments that were made by the administration, but it did so on such narrow grounds and with so many qualifications that I'm not sure it's a tremendous defeat in the way it's been characterized in some places. The court decided this case 5-3, Chief Justice Roberts not voting, because he had been on the case and, in fact, had decided it when he was a judge on the Court of Appeals before he joined the Supreme Court. So there were only 8 votes. 5 of them were to require the government, when it tries the Guantanamo detainees for war crimes, to use a process that, if not identical to, somewhat resembles the process that's used under the Uniform Code of Military Justice to court-martial our own military personnel. So that was the essence of the ruling here. But there were many other points that were not addressed by the court here. It was a rather narrow holding. And, of course, it was a decision that was effectively 5-4. We know how Roberts would have voted if he had voted. And so is perhaps not an altogether stable decision. Like the other decisions in this trilogy, it leaves many questions unanswered and does not paint with a broad brush.
What about what the president said when he said he would ask Congress to resolve some of the statutory issues addressed by the justices? Will that settle the matter, and then perhaps the administration will be able to move forward with its military tribunals?
It might. There were two issues here. Really, one was whether Congress had authorized the president to have these sort of stripped-down military commission proceedings. And the court held that it had not, but could. There's a second issue, though, and that is what's called Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention, by which the United States is bound. The court held that that did apply to detainees like Mr. Hamdan, who were about to be tried for war crimes. And that convention has certain provisions in it that say that the proceedings cannot be too abbreviated, cannot be too stripped down, even if Congress were to acquiesce in that. So Congress's authorization of the president would answer one of the questions that was raised by the court, but not necessarily both of them.
Let's move on to some of the cases that dealt with aspects of criminal law, including some on the death penalty, how evidence is gathered. Take the procedural cases first. First of all, tell us briefly about them and then what the court decided.
Well, a couple of important cases in the area of criminal procedure. One had to do with the so-called knock-and-announce rule, the rule that's been part of our jurisprudence for some time, that when police officers are executing a warrant, they have to knock and announce before they enter the premises named in the warrant. In this case, there was a violation of the knock-and-announce rule, and the question was whether this violation should result in the exclusion of the evidence that the police officers took once they entered the premises. The court held, again, very divided, 5-4, that the exclusionary rule, the usual remedy for violations of constitutional rights, should not apply here. So that's an important decision and one that worried many civil libertarians, not so much because they're worried about the knock-and-announce rule, the court reaffirmed that, but they're worried about the future of the exclusionary rule in general as a remedy for constitutional violations. The second case was an interesting one that had to do with the admissibility of a tape of a 911 call made by an alleged victim of domestic violence to report the incident and to seek police assistance. The victim, as is common in domestic violence cases, later did not appear at trial to testify against the man she said had assaulted her. And the question was the admissibility of the tape, the 911 tape, in his trial. He argued that the tape should be inadmissible because he would not have an opportunity to confront his accuser accuser, which is guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment. The court disagreed and held that the tape was admissible, but in another case it decided at exactly the same time, with facts very similar but a little bit different. The court held that the victim's statement was inadmissible. So I would say the law about the admissibility of a victim's out-of-court statement when the victim later doesn't show up to testify is pretty much unsettled here because the court made such fine distinctions between the two cases.
Mimi, you pay particular attention to death penalty cases, and there were several on the court's docket during the past term. Has a lot changed in how the death penalty is to be dealt with in the courts?
Changes in the court's death penalty jurisprudence for the last couple decades have really been very incremental, very small. But I watch for trends, of course, and one I think I see in the last few terms, including this one, is the court's willingness to inject itself in a small way, usually very narrow, very procedural, in some of the more emotional issues surrounding the death penalty, in particular in whether certain methods of execution, like lethal injection, are unnecessarily painful and cruel, and in what the role of a plausible claim of innocence should be in the appeals of someone who has been convicted and sentenced to death.
Chief Justice John Roberts and Associate Justice Samuel Alito are two new faces on the court. They were named by President Bush, the only ones to be named by the president. What have you learned from them about the decisions that have been handed down this term?
Of course, it's a little early to tell, but my impression of Chief Justice Roberts is, though, although conservative, as he was never described any other way, he has tempered his apparent commitment to certain conservative judicial principles with a desire to promote consensus on the court. With significant success, in this last term of court, nearly 50% of the decisions were without dissent, which is much higher than it's been in the previous couple of terms. Some decisions rested on narrow grounds, and I think that reflects his commitment to a sort of a judicial modesty and a desire to promote agreement among the members of the court. Justice Alito, again conservative, has shown himself, it seems to me, to be a bit more iconoclastic, more inclined to stake out his own position on certain issues, to insist that he doesn't see matters quite exactly the way the other members of the court do, even if he agrees on the outcome. Despite the fact that he was widely predicted during his confirmation hearings to be a sort of a clone of Justice Scalia, as a matter of fact, he has agreed most often with Justice Kennedy, who has proved himself, by the way, and now that Justice O'Connor has left the court, Kennedy has proved himself to be a reliable centrist. In other words, he seems to have stepped into O'Connor's role on the court. He voted with the liberal majority in the Hamdan case.
Weekend Edition legal advisor Mimi Wesson teaches at the University of Colorado School of Law. She's also a mystery writer. Her most recent novel is Chilling Effect. She joined us from the studios of KGNU in Boulder. Mimi, thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.